This is Wildcat Insider with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, and KMAN Sports Director John Kurtz.
Welcome into Wildcat Insider. John Kurtz, voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner, all here with you. We've got spring football on tap today, audio from Chris Kleiman. We've got K-State basketball winning again. We just had the all Big 12 teams released also, so there's a lot to get to today on the show. You can tweet us, as always, at the Game KMAN, or myself, at JL Kurtz, at Mitch the Fort as well. K-State wins again, though, beating Iowa State. A shorthanded, beleaguered Iowa State team playing without Rasir Bolton, who, by the way, was a third-team All-Big 12 selection, Iowa State's best player. He's also an Iowa State team that had played three games throughout the week and was tired, undoubtedly, coming into their third game of the week against K-State. But I will say what you need to do in that situation is jump out to an early lead, and K-State did do that, actually, notably for the first time in the calendar year of 2021, it was K-State's first halftime lead since the calendar hit 2021, which is pretty wild.
Well, it is. And really, the truth is K-State got off to a good start in a lot of different ways. I thought they did so in terms of effort. They shot 48% in the first half, which for them is like Baylor shooting 60 probably, yep, in all fairness. I thought they did a lot of good things in that first half. So it was really a good start. It was kind of a flip-the-switch game, though, because what went well in the first half was better for Iowa State in the second half. They shot better than K-State in the second half. Their free throws may have been the exception, because looking at the box score here, K-State was 3 of 8 at the line in the first half, 13 of 16 in the second half. But much better at attacking the rim and getting good shots and making some shots in the first half, I thought was really key. And I mean, I loved Selton Miguel's line. I think he's really been kind of an under-the-radar guy here of late. I know we've talked a lot about Nigel Pack, and rightfully so. Davion Bradford, rightfully so. Mike McGurl, rightfully so. But his line of 9, 5, and 7 assists in nearly 36 minutes was pretty darn good. He also was 4 of 9 from the floor. He has struggled shooting it at times. 1 of 4 on three-pointers. And that high-level defense. So overall, you take it, 3 out of 4, follows a 13-game slide, which makes really no sense at all. But, hey, here we are.
Yeah, and the schedule is a part of that, obviously, too.
Of course.
You know, I mean, the way that, especially when you look at, as crazy as it is, Oklahoma finishing 7th in the league, which, you know, I mean, at the time, that's a top-10 win and not leading Sports Center because of the Tiger Woods news, but
sure,
close, as Bruce Weber mentioned, to
right,
to leading Sports Center at that point in time. And now it looks like, okay, well, you put together 3 wins here at the end of the year against the other 3 teams that are at the bottom of the league with you. I think we all understand Oklahoma is much better than what the perception of 7th would be.
Well,
but there is something to that, that the schedule lightened up and
sure,
this team finally has been able to, been allowed really to build some momentum because they finally had that.
The schedule is a big part of it. I would never even try to debate that. But I do think that most people see that this team has made some progress in terms of the way they prepare, how hard they're trying to play, how much they have improved defensively. And even there is some offensive improvement, even though it doesn't always show. Meaning, if you go back and you watch the tape of the game on Saturday, much like what we just said, early they were attacking the goal. They got pretty good shots. They shot 48%, which is really good. The second half was more about foul trouble, not attacking as much, settling for jump shots and too many threes. And thus, Iowa State worked their way back into the game, and we've seen that happen a lot. They still have too many pockets of time where they just struggle offensively, and a lot of it is too much standing, too much dribbling, poor shot selection, and a lot of times just having to throw something up towards the goal at the end of a shot clock. And they did that more in the second half and did a lot of better things in the first, in my mind.
Yeah, I think the interesting part in retrospect to me about the schedule is how much would it have changed if the schedule broke differently throughout the year, if it was spread out a bit more? You know, I mean, for instance, if the Iowa State game just gets played when it was actually played.
Which I think was the 16th of January, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, does that add anything? Does it spur the defensive improvement quicker? Does it actually work out worse because K-State doesn't have this end-of-season surge? I think there are a lot of different ways that that could go. But regardless, K-State has taken advantage of the opportunity put forth here at the end of the year. And, I mean, they have a realistic chance to go beat TCU and say, even if you lose to Baylor, that you won, what, four of the last six throughout the year and wound up with five conference wins.
Well, and let's go back to your point about Oklahoma being the seventh seed. If you go back 2 weeks before that, they had just come off of a stretch where they had beaten four top 10 teams. Four top 10 teams. You go into Saturday thinking, or at least I did, and I'm just being honest about this, Oklahoma State at West Virginia. Mountaineers had been playing very, very well. They announced before the game, Ice Likely is out. We kind of expected that to be the case. No Cade Cunningham because of an ankle. Both would be available next week for the tournament. What that said to me was this could be a one-sided game and probably better take pretty convincingly West Virginia. Final score, 85-80, Oklahoma State. 31 for Avery Anderson. My point is, things have been, for almost every team minus Baylor, some ups and downs all the way through this thing. We've seen it with virtually everybody else. Texas, West Virginia, Oklahoma, OSU to a degree. Part of their stuff early was, frankly, a little bit COVID-related too. So it's been a good Big 12 season for most, as seven will go to the NCAA tournament. But it has been a little disjointed and in pieces for virtually everybody other than, and it even has for Baylor in terms of the COVID part. I mean, they sat for 21 days, but they were clearly the most consistent team throughout when it was all said and done.
And clearly took a couple of games to get back into a rhythm
for sure. Yeah.
After their COVID break. As far as this team, I think it's interesting that you brought up, okay, a lot of things have improved here, because I did ask Bruce Weber today on his press conference, all right, we know about the defense. That much is obvious that the defense has improved immensely. Mm-hmm. But what else is it that's actually come along? What else is this team doing that much better right now that they were not doing at the beginning of the year?
Oh, we're playing way harder. I mean, it's not even close. I don't think they understood how hard they had to play, you know, and then you had to experience it and the level of, you know, the play in the league. And they've grown with that. And then I really think, and I know we don't score a lot of points because we don't make shots, but I really think we move the ball much better.
I think the part about playing harder goes hand in hand with the defense. And
sure.
It's produced really admirable results. I mean, I was shocked to look at KenPom today because for a while there in the middle of the season when things were so bad, you would look and everybody thought, well, man, this offense is just brutal. They're so bad offensively. But the defense was for a long time worse by the metric of defensive efficiency versus offensive efficiency. The defense was worse than the offense. And I look today, and the offense is still at 240 in the country, which is not very good. But the defense is all the way up to 123. I mean, the defense at one point was floundering around 250.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to jump that up to 123rd in the country. Which doesn't sound like...
That's a pretty good jump, though,
yeah,
let's be honest.
You know, I mean, 123rd in a vacuum doesn't sound that great, but considering where you were, that is marked progress to put together over basically like a month and a half of the season. So there is legitimate proof here that the defense, and we can go traditional statistics if you want to as well, because they've held five straight opponents now under 60 points. The only one, all right, is a 5-6. I get the only one in that stretch that scored over 60 was West Virginia, and that was 65, and it was West Virginia's worst output of the conference season.
Right, yeah. And I go back all the way to the 9th of February, K-State played Texas and lost 80-77. They gave up 80. Texas isn't the world's best defensive team, but for K-State to score 77, let's be honest, that's pretty much front page news. But from that point on, I mean, you look, K-State gave up 67 in Stillwater, 59 at home to Kansas. They gave up 54 at TCU, 57 at home to Oklahoma, 65 on the road at West Virginia, and 56 against Iowa State on Saturday. Let's be honest, though, any way you cut it, that's much, much better. It isn't perfect by any stretch, but a heck of a lot better.
And let me correct myself here. So it's four of the last five they've held under 60, and then the fifth game in that stretch was West Virginia, who had 65, their worst conference output of the season. So any way that you want to slice it, the defense has been a lot better. And you brought up Selton Miguel. I think to round this back to a micro point, Selton Miguel has made a massive difference there. And you can there were a couple moments I can remember watching during the game on Saturday where it's like, man, he just really hounds people, and he has absolutely taken off along with the team improvement defensively as somebody who can be what appears to be a bona fide defensive stopper.
Well, I really think the way he has played in the last, I don't know, however many games you want to say, in the back half of the conference season, I guess I'll use a reference point here for this particular topic. He's been a really, really solid, rock solid on-ball defender. The game that sticks out for me as much as any was the game at TCU.
Yeah.
Where, and I'm just being honest about this, I think R.J. Nimhardt is a really rock-solid player. He's 14, 15, 16, 17 points a game, most nights out, very consistent. The game in Fort Worth, he acted like in the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game where he normally takes over, he didn't want any part of it because he knew he wasn't going to get a shot anyway against Selton. So that is a big step forward for Selton Miguel, and I think they are expecting him because he has settled into that role, you know, that moving forward he can be down the road a Big 12 all-defensive team member kind of guy. And I think even though he still has a lot of improvement to make on the offensive side, I think you have seen that he is a better passer than he probably showed early. His shot has been better lately. Still not where it needs to be, but better. Shot selection is better. So there's a lot of his game that has taken a pretty good step forward.
Definitely have seen the development all the way around. And Now you start thinking about, okay, the three freshmen, Davion Bradford obviously has had his moments. Nigel has been pretty good throughout, and now you throw Selton Miguel's development on top of it. That freshman class really does seem like, if you just take the last five games, that they have lived up to in a lot of ways the potential that we thought they would have. Now, a part of the issue has been the sophomore class. Dejuan Gordon has been out there, but Montavious Murphy and now Antonio Gordon have dealt with some issues. We will have an update on Antonio Gordon later on here in the show as well, because Bruce Weber says he in all likelihood will be out for the rest of the season. For K-State, which is likely to be just this week, obviously. But we have some spring football to talk about. Some audio from Chris Kleiman, who says he's getting back to the basics with spring ball this year. We'll tell you why and what that means coming up next. All right, a couple of things here, because I've had this sent to me now multiple times. It was tweeted at 4:07, so like just after we got on the air here. I have no idea who this guy is, which is always a great start before you give something potentially newsworthy. Jeff Ehrman, he works for 24/7 Sports, but it looks like predominantly covers Maryland. But this tweet is now gaining some traction. He says, two big jobs I'm hearing are very likely to open after this season. Kansas State, likely Bruce Weber retirement, and Arizona, Sean Miller, past the breaking point with NCAA violations. I feels a little bit to me like just throwing some darts, but I will just put that out there. I don't know that I've heard a ton of talk, certainly not lately, that would be surrounding a Bruce Weber potential retirement scenario. But I guess, you know, a lot of the conversation has centered around, all right, is he going to be back or not? Because is he going to get fired or not? But I suppose that's something else to monitor. I don't know how much to trust this. In fact, I lean toward not putting a ton of stock into this, to be completely honest. But it is out there.
It is. I'm frankly a little bit surprised by the Weber side of the tweet, not so much with Sean Miller, to be perfectly blunt. Not saying it's true or false. I don't know. We were discussing this off air a little bit, and I'll say a little bit on air what I said off. I've known Bruce Weber for 9 years, and I think he is a basketball coach and a gym rat. I mean, he loves the game. There's no doubt. But he's more than just a basketball coach. I'm convinced of that. He has a lot more going than just coaching basketball, as much as he loves it. And we all probably get to a point where you draw the line and say, okay, I've done what I can. Time to go do something different. When is that? Is it after this year? I don't think so. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It's an interesting angle.
Yeah, the part that seems – I guess I have no idea how much the last 2 years have worn on him because I
– Oh, sure, it has.
It's worn on everybody, I think, involved with the program, just yeah. with how taxing things have been going through all the losses and the losing. But, you know, you are here with some momentum at the end of the year, and we just brought up Selton Miguel being like a third freshman that's playing pretty well. I mean, yeah. I would think that would be hard to walk away from as a coach if you're going to get the opportunity to come back, being like, well, we finally, in a COVID year, been together and mm-hmm. have some momentum, and it's all these freshmen that are playing well for us. So that's another part of what makes me doubt some of the veracity, the validity of that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Just mark it with we'll see.
Yeah, that's all you can do at this particular point. I think what you said there makes some sense. There will come a day. I just don't know that it's now. And based on what you said, I mean, it may not seem like much to some, but for them to go through what they have, including that long losing streak, and then finish like that, regardless of the competition, I think he sees that as a positive. And he has said all along that he enjoys these freshmen, and that they are getting better. And they've had their dauber down at times after games, and it's tough. But you come back the next day or the day after that and see practice, and you wouldn't be able to tell one way or the other. They're ready to go again. I admire that. I do.
Well, to switch gears to spring football, one thing that I found intriguing and interesting from Chris Klieman's first press conference was the fact that he talked a lot about trying to get back to the basics, mm-hmm. which I had not considered that specifically when thinking about spring football this year. I think the obvious is, hey, everybody's going to be really jacked up for this because last year ended on a poor note, but there's been a lot of work put in to retool the culture. There's some transfers. Didn't have spring ball last year. I would imagine that the coaches in particular are like, please let me get my hands on these guys this spring so that I can get back to some of this, which is what Klieman said. It. I was like, that makes sense. He says, we're using one defensive call, practice one. We're using two defensive calls, practice two, because the focus has to just be blocking and tackling and the absolute bare essentials, the basics to what it is that we're doing. Which, of course, I mean, last year you had less practice time, guys out for weeks at a time. You know, if you test positive or you're contact traced, I mean, there's 2 weeks where you can't do anything. You're not able to be there at practice. It would make complete sense that is where things would slip the most. I think we saw that throughout college football, but you know, maybe K-State being hit as hard as they were with COVID got that worse than some.
I would agree with that. Some would say everybody went through it, and I think that's right. But I'll give you an example. In watching the other day, you know, I'm sitting there, and every time I see somebody do something, I'm thinking, well, he played in only 4 games last year, or this guy missed 3 games, or whatever it might have been with COVID protocol or what have you. And, oh, there's one that opted out in Joe Irvin, you know. I mean, so there's a lot of that. And the words that you described with Coach Klieman in his first presser, I think I can safely say that I think they are living that in trying to get to the basics of – he even talked about, you know, just they didn't tackle well last year. I think there were a lot of reasons why, but at the end of the day, I think they want to make a big step there, an improvement there, and that's the focus. Today was the first day in pads. They had the two practices last week with just the helmets and shorts. So, they're just kind of getting started good, 3 practices in, but you can tell that They're working on culture. They're working on player development. But again, getting back to doing things the right way, even as simple as, you know, hand placement and feet placement if you're an offensive lineman or a linebacker or whatever it might be. So there's a lot going on.
And it seems like a lot of this is having a pretty positive effect because Kleiman mentioned that it feels like the culture is improving.
Kids don't miss meals. They make every meal. We're not missing many classes, if any, not missing many tutors. Those little things that allow you to be successful on the field. And I've never been around a team that does some knucklehead things off the field and all of a sudden you're going to be really good on Saturdays. It doesn't work like that. And our kids have taken to that, and our kids are holding each other accountable to that standard.
Just feels like, speaking of things that go hand in hand, this would be one also, improving the culture and getting back to the basics on the field. I mean, off the field, obviously there was some work to be done there from what was happening last year and with all the transfers midseason. But on the field, that's the other part of it too. Like, you better be doing the right things on the field. We need to get back to the building blocks of a true successful program and team on the field. And it just feels like a lot of that was well on its way in 2019 by the end of the year. And then COVID exacerbated some problems that may have been there in 2020, amplified those. And now it's all about just getting back to, hey, where were we at in 2019 with a lot of this stuff?
I think that's perfectly said. I think that would even be kind of like a goal to get back to that particular standard, because if you think about it, in 19, they weren't perfect in 2019, but they were a much more consistent team that year than they were this past season. I think there are a ton of reasons why, but some of those are pretty obvious that you stated. And again, this is all about doing things the right way, day in and day out, being accountable to yourself and to your team and your teammates. And I think at the end of the day, that's where this is. That's the goal.
Yeah, and I would take right now, honestly, 8-5. I would take the 2019 season right now if you gave me that opportunity. Maybe some people wouldn't. But after last year with Skyler coming back, just feeling the need to regain some stability with the program, I mean, if you said, hey, you get to go back to what it was in 2019, 8-4 regular season, I mean, I'm taking that in a heartbeat.
Well, I think a lot would. There would be some that may not. They would maybe roll the dice and hope for better, and I get that with this schedule. The schedule is, again, that, you know, break where you have 5 conference home games, 4 on the road. That is better than it just makes more sense that it's a better deal for the years that you have that kind of split. And who knows what people are – I don't have a real good feel yet about what people are thinking about the non-conference schedule, but I think everybody – I can tell you this in looking early, and this is an early, early look at Stanford. I was looking through their depth chart for their last game, and of their 2 deep on offense and on defense and on special teams. So think about how many guys that is. Only 8 names from that list will not return in 2021. Similar to K-State. I mean, we've lost some guys, but we have a large group of guys back to try to build around. They lost their quarterback. K-State has Skyler back. So there's one difference. But there's game one. And then you saw, you know, I mean, Nevada had a pretty good year. Southern Illinois is pretty good.
Just beat North Dakota State.
Yes. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting all the way through. I'm so excited for what we're going to see the rest of this spring and get ready for next fall.
You further convinced me. If you gave me a chance to just hit a big button, put the Staples Easy button next to me, and I get 8-4, I would absolutely slam it right now. We'll get more on some specific position battles and position in particular that Chris Kleiman feels great about later on here in the show. But this has been pushed aside based on basketball and football so far. We got the All-Big 12 basketball team. There was one K-State selection on there. We'll tell you who and what that is next. We have the All-Big 12 basketball team that has been released. The player of the year in the Big 12 is Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State. Your defensive player of the year, Davion Mitchell of Baylor, newcomer of the year, Mack McClung, freshman of the year, Cade Cunningham, Kai Jones of Texas, the sixth man of the year, David McCormick, the most improved player, and the coach of the year is my man, Scott Drew. In his 18th season at Baylor, winning the league championship for the first time. We have one K-State mention on the entire list here, and that's first, second, third team, honorable mention, all defense, all newcomer, all freshman. The one selection that K-State had is Mike McGurl, honorable mention, all Big 12. So what that means is Nigel Pack got snubbed from the all-freshman team, but I am happy for Mike McGurl that he got some level of recognition there, and it's probably a fair thing to put him there, honorable mention. But I would think Nigel Pack certainly deserved consideration. Jalen Wilson, Cade Cunningham, Mike Miles, Greg Brown, Jalen Bridges is your all-freshman team that McGurl did not wind up on there. The only thought that I have as it relates to that is I was looking through the statistics the other day on three-point shooting because, frankly, it was looking at how much K-State needs to desperately improve that heading into next year. And I did notice that Nigel was like 27-28% from three in Big 12 play. Has not, at least as I recall, now this was a couple of games ago, hasn't been shooting it at quite the same clip in Big 12 play as he had in non-conference.
Yeah, he's right at 30% in conference play, 23 of 78, 37% overall for the year, 49 of 133. So, yeah, that's a good catch on your part. It has been tougher for him in league play. And when I first saw the all-freshman team, let me go back and say it a different way. When I heard that he did not make the all-freshman team, I was pretty disappointed, to be honest about it. And then when you get to looking at that team, I would tell you that I think it's as competitive as a lot, if not most years recently. I mean, to headline it with Cunningham and Miles is pretty legitimate. Those two and Jalen Wilson, Jalen Bridges, Greg Brown, that's a pretty good group, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, Greg Brown, many believe, is a lottery pick. Cunningham could be the first pick in the draft. Jalen Wilson, for a lot of this regular season, frankly, was KU's best player or most consistent player. Bridges, to me, if you're going to argue Nigel, there's where you attack is Bridges, because I think Nigel probably had the better start. Bridges had the better finish. The question is in between who did most there. And unfortunately for Nigel, if you really get to looking at it, he missed five conference games.
So that was the other thing I was just going to bring up.
That probably hurt him.
Did Bridges miss any conference games? Was he there?
I will look, but I don't think so. I have that right here. I will look for you, sir.
Because I think it's really a three-pronged thing here as to why Nigel gets left off. It's the performance wasn't quite as good shooting the ball in conference play. He missed five conference games, and like you just outlined, it's a very competitive year for the all-freshman team in the league.
Bridges, I told a fib there. I thought I had it, and I don't. I have their overall, and Bridges played in 25 games, so he probably played in more league games than Nigel. But I don't have their actual Big 12 results. We'll look it up during a break, but you had the four games with the protocol, and then the game where he missed with the eye infection at West Virginia probably hurt some. But because if you really look at the numbers, I think you can make a pretty good argument. I mean, Nigel, 12 points a game overall. This is not in league play. If you want league play, I'll throw that your way. Because he was even, you know, pretty rock solid in league play. 13 games in league play, 11.6 points, 3.4 rebounds, 47 assists to 27 turnovers, shot 37%. I'm rounding up there, 36.7. Shot 29.5%, so 30%, and then made 20 of 22 free throws. So he was pretty good. But those five are good. To be honest with you, I'll throw this out here. Mentioned this to you off air. I didn't have a real big issue with most of the voting this time, and once in a while I'll have one that I'm going, what? Hang on here. But the only thing I would change on the first and second team is I would flip McBride to the first team and move Culver to the second team, despite the fact that Culver led the league in double-doubles through the entirety of the full season. But Deuce was their guy down the stretch. He just was. And I think based on that, maybe he should have been a first-teamer before Derek Culver.
I think I would tend to agree with you. Yeah. I'm not sure. We're talking West Virginia for West Virginia swap here. So, yeah. You know, West Virginia's probably not too beat up about it necessarily. But I'm with you. You watch them. I mean, McBride was the dude that was really carrying them. I mean, Culver's incredibly talented, a very good player.
Oh,
also.
No doubt. Yeah.
And Cade Cunningham, do we feel like Cade Cunningham really wrapped it up with the 40-point performance that he had against Oklahoma there late?
Yeah, and this is an argument, too, because I even asked Bruce Weber one night on the radio show, and this was with a couple of weeks left, who would you select if the season were over right now, who would you select as player of the year, Cade Cunningham or Jared Butler? And he
said Isaac Likely.
No, he loves Ice, but I know he does. I think he was leaning basically towards Butler. But again, Baylor missed some time. And during that stretch, or maybe not right during that stretch, but hey, when you have a 40 and 10 night, people tend to notice because those don't happen very often. And he had it in Bedlam, which was also big. So I just wonder if you had, say, 200 listeners in a poll, how many would pick Cunningham and how many would pick Jared Butler? Or how many would pick somebody else? You think Cunningham would win?
I feel like Cunningham would probably win just because he has more star power, name recognition to him just with the recruiting pedigree. That would be my theory. I don't know if that's necessarily right because I think I actually would lean Butler just because I like rewarding Baylor for what they did this year. But it is hard to ignore Cunningham and his performance. Not just that, but then they go out and play Oklahoma again and he's almost kind of like a decoy and other guys go off and they win. But, honestly, if we're on that subject, I mean, hey, they just went and beat West Virginia without him.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. I think I would lean Butler, but I would guess that more people than not would say Cunningham.
I get Cunningham, and I respect it a lot. The kid's terrific. And late in games, you know, he was the guy more times than not. I was trying to think of this, and I couldn't find it as in the short period of time that I had. But I'm wondering how many guys in the last, say, 20 years in our league have been first-team all-conference and first-team all-defensive team all Big 12 and not been the player of the year. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
At least from my take on it, because it shows you how good you have to be, I guess, to be the player of the year in our league because Cunningham did lead the league in scoring. Okay. There's no doubt about that. And I will say this, too. I was happy to see Davion Mitchell be the defensive player of the year. He is unbelievably good. Unreal.
Baylor as a team is, too. Yeah. they are very, very good defensively. Not a great weekend for K-State baseball. We'll talk about that coming up next here on Wildcat Insider. Not a great weekend for K-State baseball. The Wildcats did win on Friday over Eastern Illinois. Lost Saturday 6-5, and then yesterday 14-7. In a game, the K-State led 7-2 at one point, and yeah, it's tough. I mean, a five-game win streak after the win on Friday, feeling pretty good about where things are heading. You still know that you have Connor McCullough pitching on Sunday, no matter what happens on Saturday. Then Saturday turns into a game with a bevy of missed opportunities in a 6-5 loss. And Sunday, you're up 7-2, feeling like, okay, win the series, little blip in the radar with the loss on Saturday. No big deal, right? And then, man, 5 errors, 10 unearned runs, including 13 unearned runs in the last 2 games of the series, and all of a sudden it's a 14-7 game on a day where the ball was just flying out to left field and home runs were hit, errors were committed, and a loss was had by K-State. Just a tough, frustrating weekend all the way around.
Yeah, I think the first reaction for me is what you said there in the beginning where, okay, You drop the game Saturday. You got a really good pitcher coming back on Sunday. You're ahead 7-2. Go win that game. But it didn't happen. That, to me, is what makes the weekend sting more than most things. Yes, you can point to maybe some at-bats where guys were a little bit anxious, and I think that happened a little bit on Saturday and Sunday. A little bit of breakdown in, you know, defensively and in the bullpen, absolutely. So I think what do you do? Move forward and try it. Again, disappointing as heck because you're right. Five in a row, you wonder about the Saturday game being, you know, if you can get that, you're probably thinking sweep, right? Because of what the pitcher you have going on Sunday. And he pitched well enough to win.
Oh, more than well enough, yeah.
More than well enough, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, the record's a little deceiving because they have pitched it pretty well, but they've got to shore up a little bit on the defensive side.
Yeah, well, and the bullpen, too. I mean,
yes.
That's the tough part. The last two games just left you taking a step back and going, okay, all across the board, there are definite things that need to be worked on. McCullough and Wicks have been awesome as two starters. Carson Seymour, rockier in two of his three starts, including on Saturday. So you're thinking, okay, what's going on with that part of the rotation? The bullpen has been fairly suspect, and you know, Tyler Ekberg was one of the guys who got really hit around on Sunday. Now, again, allowing unearned runs because that inning,
sure,
the big inning, had been extended by just a pretty routine throwing error by Nick Goodwin at second. But Ekberg got taken out of the park. He was getting hit hard. Eric Torres, who was thought to be one of the best relievers on this team, one of the real frontline guys there, he was hit again, and he has really struggled. So between that and the offense, which was lagging behind everything else really to start the year, coming along in some spots, I think, but there are holes across the board that need to be shored up right now. And I think some of this you can attribute to, hey, just getting the season rolling and some younger guys that are in there playing, but we've also named off a lot of veterans here. So there,
oh, sure.
I think Pete Hughes is going to be getting after those guys this week, although they don't have much time because they're playing six games. So at least today, I'm sure, was pretty spirited.
Yeah, right back at it tomorrow and Wednesday, right? And then in Houston over the weekend?
Yeah, four games this weekend. So that, I mean, that's the difficult thing. Last week, you had some extra time with no midweek games to get ready for that weekend series. There's no rest for the weary right now. You have to get back on your horse pretty quick here.
Yeah, and again, it's really easy to say be aggressive but be selective at the plate, right? That is a tough and fine line to walk because you do want to be aggressive, but not overly so. And when you're pressing, sometimes you do, you know, try to drive one that maybe not be the best pitch to try to drive, and then it kind of becomes a little bit of a funk.
We'll talk some quarterbacks coming up next. Chris Kleiman, I thought, made the quarterback situation sound more interesting with his comments last week.